The following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.
The Force is strong with us, and we hope it is strong with you. Welcome to another edition of The New Jedi Archives with Zach Hagenbusher and Ben Schultz.
Hello, Zach.
Hello, Ben.
And how are you today?
You sound seductive today.
Well, the better to defeat you in debate. The dark side is seductive.
No, you sound great, and I sound pretty good, I would say myself. And you want to know why?
Why?
Because we are using our brand new studio equipment.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
We are almost professional.
We both have our own individual microphone.
Right.
And now we don't have to speak into, what were we using before? A blue snowball?
Yeah.
We had it sitting on the coffee table, and then you were farther away from it than I was, so you were always quieter than I was.
That's
more
because,
quiet.
That's because I'm a quieter person.
I think so. But now, we're all
nobody who knows
level.
Me will agree with
yeah,
that
no,
statement.
That's not true. You're quieter right now. You're relatively...
I'm very subdued.
Yeah, that's the word, subdued.
I'm
serene.
Lulling you into a false sense of security.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know why, because we're not going to disagree a lot on this.
I don't know if we are, but we could. You never know.
Right. I never underestimate your ability to be wrong.
We did disagree a little bit. Well, I wouldn't say disagree. So we don't look back a lot on this podcast. First of all, let me welcome everyone who's listening right now, whether it's on the Galactic Network website, gncast.com, whether it's on Spreaker, our original home, or on iTunes, or on Google Play. Wherever you are listening, thank you for taking some time. The response on the Galactic Network has been amazing. I can't even believe it that we have this many people listening to us right now.
Yeah.
Granted, I mean, it's, you know... under 100, I would say.
And I just want to point out that I love them all,
and
as opposed to you.
No, I love them all. I like to show appreciation for our day ones, okay? The people who have been with us since the very beginning. That being said, I did spend some time a few weekends ago now in Merrill, Wisconsin. I was hanging out at Linkcon, which used to be called Pizza and Games way back in the day, but now it's called Linkcon, run by a friend of mine, Joshua Yeager, who I host a pro wrestling podcast with. That's Pro Wrestling Off Topic with Zach Hagenbusher and Joshua Yeager. And we...
Way to get a plug-in for your other podcast, Zach.
Hey, if anybody wants to, you know, hear my thoughts on pro wrestling, absolutely try and find that. But that is not part of the Galactic Network. You're right, Ben. Maybe it was out of line that I
yes,
said...
Yes, it was.
Pro Wrestling Off Topic with Zach Hagenbusher and Joshua Yeager. PWOT for short. But anyway, I think...
Pwot.
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 Pwot. Yeah, pwot. Whatever you would like to say. And you're getting me off track.
Oh, that was hard.
I was hanging out at Linkcon, and I got to talk to quite a few people who were, they were big Star Wars fans, and we made sure that we have new business cards now that has a link on it and everything, so we handed it out, make sure that those people knew. I think that you will be very proud of me, Ben. I was undefeated in the times that I was challenged in Star Wars Trivial Pursuit. I won both games.
Very nice.
Both the Black Series Saga, you know, Complete Saga Edition with Episode 7 questions, and the classic original trilogy version of Trivial Pursuit that I have from 1999.
I'm not sure I would say I'm impressed, but let's say I'm not disappointed.
Okay, good. that's true. Okay, you're right. I don't think...
Because I expect that out of you.
I would think I'd make you proud. Sure, that'd be the better term, right? I'd make you proud.
I guess. I suppose.
Okay. Damn it.
You shouldn't
worry.
He
just won't heap any kind of praise on me at all.
You shouldn't worry about being prideful, Zach. That's very dark side of you.
That's true. Pride is it leads to anger or whatever, right?
Right, right.
No, probably not. Pride is fine. Pride is fine, right?
Oh, I think it's fine, but, you know, I'm okay with fear and anger, too. So.
Would you describe Ezra Bridger as a proud person?
Well, before you talk about Ezra Bridger,
I'm trying to segue.
I know you are, but there's something I need to talk about
first. All
right,
okay, before we get into our topic for today.
Right, I want to tell everybody that we're going to be at Gamapalooza.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In October.
So, October, was that 20th through the 22nd, right?
I believe that is correct.
So, I don't know if both of us are going to be there for all three of those days. I don't even know if one of us is going to be there for all three of those days. But we will be appearing at a new Gamapalooza.
It'll be Saturday and Sunday because those are the days the vendors are there. The first day is just games.
I see. Okay. So Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd of October. We will be in Oshkosh for new Gamapalooza, which will be a great time. We've been there before, actually. Ben, in his now novel writing, novel publishing, imaging, right?
Right.
Erision Entertainment. He has been a vendor there in the past. Well, they reached out to him, and they said, "Hey, we're looking for, you know, if you're looking to be a vendor again this year, please let us know." And I said, "Ben, why don't we just go into get our podcast some exposure in another part of the state."
And we will be recording there.
Yes, we will.
So if you want to come down and say hi and challenge Zach to a Star Wars trivia question off,
then you are more than welcome. If you want to challenge Ben, which I think I would be much more happy with, I'd far prefer that.
Or if you would like to arbitrate an argument between Zach and Ben.
Yes.
Stop down and visit us at New Gamapalooza.
And we may have a special guest. We can't say that for sure, 100%, but we may have a special guest with us at New Gamapalooza during that recording. So that we will that episode will be coming out as soon as we would usually get it to you. I think that we drop an episode that Tuesday. That happens like right before the convention, so it wouldn't be the Tuesday after, it would be the next Tuesday. Whatever the next every other Tuesday would be is when you will get our live episode from New Gamapalooza
Live if you're getting it recorded.
It's live because we're recording it in front of people.
Oh, okay.
Right. Like right now, we're not recording this in front of anyone.
So this would be like a live studio audience.
That's what I mean, yeah. Live.
We should get a canned laugh track.
Ha, 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 ha.
Then people will think you're funny.
Oh.
Shots fired.
Ooh, shots fired.
Okay, now you can segue.
Okay. So, Ben, damn, that hurt. That hurt me. That hurt my pride. There we go. That'll be my segue. That hurt my pride. I'm just like Ezra Bridger's pride is hurt quite often. You kind of has to learn how to get over it in the first season of Star Wars Rebels. Now, well, the reason why I said before that we don't like to look back is because we really haven't looked back on a lot of, you know, we've done the episode and that's what we've done it on, and we haven't, like, gone back on our word in a lot of things. But I remember near the beginning of this, I told everybody that I didn't want to talk about Star Wars Rebels until the show was done.
And you lied.
I guess I lied. Because what happened was...
There's no I guess about it. It's definitively we're talking about it and you said we weren't.
We said that we didn't want to talk about it until the show was done.
Right.
But that... We said that before they made the announcement that season 4 was going to be the last season of the show.
But so, now we're recording before season 4 is done.
We are. But I've got the itch.
All right.
And you agreed to it, so...
That's because I'm easy.
Sometimes
I say yes before I even hear the question.
Sometimes you say yes to anything.
That's right.
And you said yes to covering Star Wars Rebels. So we're going to spread it out. It's not going to be consecutive. We're going to cover season 1 today, and we'll cover season 2 and season 3 at a later date.
And eventually season 4.
And eventually, season 4, once it is finished, obviously, it's debuting this fall, so we are not going to be able to, you know, talk about that in its entirety until at least, I would say, April or May, when it's finally done. And I would say we're both also going to be watching it as it happens. We're not going to wait until the Blu-ray comes out. That was the other thing that kind of inspired this for me. I picked up the Season 3 Blu-ray of Rebels.
You know, admittedly, I don't think I've seen all of Season 3 yet.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Why not?
Because I got rid of cable.
Oh. Well, it wasn't before Twin Suns aired, because we watched that together. Here.
Right. It was shortly thereafter.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Well, I can lend you the Blu-ray.
Well, we can deal
with
that.
My dad is done with it now. My dad, he finished it really quick, because they don't have cable there either, so.
Well, I binge everything, so it'll be done quickly. Anyway, let's talk about Season 1 before we worry about Season 3, shall we?
Yep, true. We're jumping the gun. All right, Season 1 of Star Wars Rebels ran from fall of 2014 to spring of 2015. It was the shortest season so far of Star Wars Rebels. 14 episodes, 15 if you count the two-parter as two separate episodes, which I don't. I always like to consider it just one. And that actually, that two-parter wasn't even really part of the season, because the season itself, I think they count as the 13 episodes that they ordered after the two-parter. The two-parter was considered a movie.
Right, it was a made-for-television movie.
Yep, a special movie event, which they actually aired it on,
as a movie.
On ABC, on the big ABC network TV. And that was when they edited in the shot of the sequence with Darth Vader, James Earl Jones as Darth Vader for the first time in 35 years, speaking to the Inquisitor. So that was awesome. I remember I watched it on TV specifically because they threw that scene in there. That was really smart of them. And then they edited in that scene on the Blu-ray cut of the episode as well.
See, I specifically watched it because it was called Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
And it was about Star Wars.
And it was about Rebels.
Well, I don't really care about the Rebels, but...
Oh.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
He's such a hater. I'm just pointing that out. He's such a hater.
Some of these Rebels are some of my favorite Rebels, admittedly.
And they did a really good job. That was something that I think we both agree on, is that this first season of the show, I mean, really, is... It's like a color by numbers. This is how you introduce characters. Like, this is how you do it. This is how you make people care. It's not like these people, because obviously they're part of the Star Wars galaxy. So we were going to have a preconceived idea of like, okay, we want to like them.
Well,
but they made me really enjoy these characters. Like, they organically made me enjoy them.
The thing that I liked most about Rebels, remember when we were talking about the prequels, every one of the prequels, I kept saying, they started telling us the story and stopped telling us the story in the wrong place, and then kept hinting at better movies that they should have made, but
sure,
didn't. Rebels didn't do that. These are the prequels we wanted. Rebels is the... Now, maybe not the right time, not the same time frame, but I mean, this is the type of story we were expecting.
Okay.
From a prequel movie. They're characters that we can either identify with or at least enjoy watching. They're doing things that actually have some strategic or some value to the story. And it's enhancing the Star Wars universe in a way that Misa think other characters did not do.
I see. No, that's a really good point. I never thought of that before. Because, I mean, it is. It's a prequel series to the original trilogy.
Right.
A direct prequel series, well, to Rogue One and then the original trilogy. But I never thought of it that way. That these are the prequels, in many ways, that people probably wish that they got back in 1999.
I even said that when we first watched this. The kids and I sat down to watch Star Wars Rebels, the movie, when it was on. The two-parter. And I said, now why didn't they do this for the prequels? They could have done these characters, and that would have been an awesome... Or they could have used even the characters. But this type of storytelling, this thing, I think it's just... like I said, I think these are the prequels we wanted.
Well, it's the prequels that you wanted. I like Jar Jar. No, I'm kidding. I don't, obviously.
But yes, he does. He's wearing a Jar Jar shirt right now.
Oh, you caught me. You caught me. And we're not posting a picture, okay? Anyway, let's actually start by talking about that two-parter. We, when we talk about these seasons, and we're going to do the same thing with the Clone Wars, I think, we're going to pick 5 episodes between the both of us that we thought were highlights of the season. Now, obviously, for this season, that was a little easier to do because there were not as many episodes. You know, counting the movie, there were only 14 episodes in the whole season. But once we get to the Clone Wars, where we're getting 20 to 25 episodes in a single season, then it's going to be a little tougher. Spark of Rebellion was the name of the premiere of Star Wars Rebels. We meet Ezra Bridger. We meet, obviously, all of our heroes. Kanan Jarrus, Hera Syndulla, Sabine Wren, Zebarelios, and Chopper. We also get a hint at the Grand Inquisitor at the end. And Agent Kallus, we also meet him. He's one of the primary antagonists here. I thought they handled the introduction of each character very well. Ezra, presented as the street rat. You know, a lot of people, you know, initially called him Aladdin. He's Space Aladdin. And that's kind of true. He's an orphan. He doesn't have any parents. He's running around. He's
taking fruit. Of course, he's an orphan and doesn't have parents. He's the main character in a Star Wars story.
Touché. Touché. But hey, he's not on a desert planet.
He's on Lothal, which has plenty of desert area, though.
Sure, and it's a little, it's very lacking in its foliage.
But it only has one sun.
True. Unlike Tatooine.
And Jakku.
Ezra, we're introduced to this planet of Lothal, which the Empire seems to have a particular interest in. I think they have a lot of, they build things there. They build walkers, they build speeder bikes, they build things on this.
Everything but TIE fighters and spaceships, I think.
It's an outer rim planet as well, so the same as Tatooine, if you want to draw that comparison. And we find out that Ezra has kind of been using the Force in little ways, whether he really knows it or not. You know, he was able to make the jump from the ground all the way up to the ramp of the ghost, you know, just with that package. It's like, how else did he think that he was going to make that?
Did Luke have a Rebel helmet, or that style helmet, all before? Is he the only orphan who doesn't get one?
What are you talking about?
Well, you know, the big white helmet that they wear with the eye shields that come down?
Are you talking about Ezra's helmet, or are you talking about...
Well, no. It just dawned on me. Ezra has one. Anakin has one. Jyn Erso has one. Is Luke the only Star Wars orphan who didn't get a fighter pilot helmet?
Well, he has his own fighter pilot helmet.
But that's after he joins the Rebellion. I mean, did he have one at the farm?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
So he's the only one who didn't start with a helmet.
Who doesn't have a helmet of some kind?
At the beginning.
Because obviously Anakin's helmet is a pod racer helmet.
Right, but it has it's that same style, that white.
No, it isn't. Anakin's like a tan with goggles.
Okay. It just dawned on me that everybody gets a helmet except poor Luke.
Except for Luke. Wormy.
As except for Wormy.
Call him. Little Wormy.
And his sister Squirmy. We went over that.
No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
That's not what... No, never mind. We'll just let that right there.
I think it's a very good introduction to the characters. I think that the plot doesn't feel like it's stretched out. You know, it because it's a two-part episode, you're able to let some things breathe, and you're able to let some character moments happen, and you're still able to have the action in there that you want, and you're still able to have the big set pieces. Now, granted, it was the beginning of the show, so they had to spend a lot of money on these initial assets, you know, creating the character models and creating the planets, and that's because that leads to it not looking as polished as it does in season 2 and season 3. So visually it's probably the least spectacular
of all of them,
but it's still very good. What did you think of the aesthetic, because Clone Wars was very angular. You know, we talked about that with the Jendi Tartakovsky Clone Wars a couple weeks ago. That the CGI Clone Wars, the canon Clone Wars, almost borrowed a lot from that animation style and just kind of put it into a 2D, or rather a 3D atmosphere. You know, very very angular faces, the jawlines. It was like... it was like you took everything in Star Wars and just put like an edge to it. There wasn't a lot of humanity. The characters didn't look human to me.
Well, I think they did that on purpose in Clone Wars, and I think they went away from that on purpose in Rebels. Because in Clone Wars, if you think about those characters, it is a grittier. That's a war story. There's no two ways. It's the Clone Wars.
Sure.
But it has that edgy feel to it. And you got behind those characters because they were awesome. But if you didn't know who Anakin was, it would take a couple episodes for you to get behind Anakin as a character. I'm guessing. I don't know what it would be like to not get behind Anakin right away. Oh, no, wait, I do. I saw episode one. Ezra... it's a little boy you want to take care of. You feel bad for him right away because, as you said, he appears more human. He's softer, and that doesn't make him look hardened, I guess is the word.
So it never bothered you? Because obviously, this is the only time that we see Wookiees in Star Wars Rebels so far. Is this premiere episode, Spark of Rebellion. And the Wookiees do look pretty bad. You know, like they're very plastic looking, and that's something that I've heard as a general descriptor for this is plastic looking, like the characters and the overall design. I've even heard people go so far as to describe the show as Kenner action figures brought to life.
That would just make me like it even more.
Sure.
Because so I would, love Kenner.
Would you describe
figures?
It as Kenner action figures brought to life?
I wouldn't. The thing is, you're looking at a show, let's face it, they did the two-parter kind of as a test market to determine what they were going to do. They invested a lot of money in it to start with. How far did you want them to take that investment before they knew there was going to be a payoff?
Sure.
So you're seeing, is it as polished as later episodes? No, it's not. But they didn't know they were going to have four seasons when they started it.
Well, now I'm saying overall, the look of the show, even going forward, you know, the characters, they look this way, they look different than they did in Clone Wars. In some cases, we get characters the same version, you know, older versions of characters that we saw in Clone Wars. They don't look the same as they did.
But you have to remember the perspective the story is being told from, and I think that change in perspective... was reflected in the change in art style, because Clone Wars is told from the perspective of the Republic. The Republic are the good guys. And so it gives everything that angular military precision look because of the story that they're telling. And I think when they're telling this story, it's a ragtag band of rebels. I mean, it's right in the title. And so I think that softer look kind of helps bring that out in storytelling without having to narrate it or throw scenes in. I think it actually helped. Did some of the things look not as good as I'd like them to? Sure. But by and large, again, as I said before, these are the prequels I wanted.
Sure. So you've made mention in the past of the idea that you will watch, you know, when we were talking about the prequels, even if it's something that you're not a huge fan of, if you start a season of a TV show, you will watch the second episode and maybe even beyond, just because you want to give it a chance to grow on you.
Right.
Were you in love with Star Wars Rebels from the get-go with Spark of Rebellion?
Yes, by the end of these episodes, by the end of the two-parter, I was in love with Rebels. Some of the characters, and I'm sure we'll talk about the characters individually later, just jumped out at you in such a wonderful way that it was hard not to fall in love with them. Like, the Jedi is not the badass, which is something that hit me right away.
Sure.
The Mandalorian is an art freak. She's a graffiti artist.
Right. She's very, very focused on self-expression.
Who likes to blow shit up. She's a graffiti artist who likes to blow shit up, who wears Mandalorian armor. Way to resurrect and represent Mandalore after the shit-ass Boba Fett we got.
Oh, that's talking about shots fired. Right. Shot fired right there. I feel like that might be our claim to fame. There we go. I got it. See, that's the problem. You get new equipment, and you can still stumble on your words, and it's not going to help.
I was going to say it's the same tongue you've been using.
Same tongue. That's a problem. But I just got to get a tongue replacement.
Yeah.
That'll be our claim to fame. We'll be the Star Wars podcast that doesn't like Boba Fett.
Right. We're the only two people who love Star Wars and hate Boba Fett.
This is a Galactic Network podcast.
Hi.
Hello.
Making a promo is hard. Hey, this is Brad Ludwig from the Adventure Party podcast. Every Sunday, we talk about board games, card games, role-playing games, reindeer games. Co-host, friend, game designer, and gaming store manager Glenn Bittner reviews a game each week and recommends something to add to your library or game closet setup thing. Our Kickstarter spotlight shines on a game you should back with your hard-earned cash. We've picked successfully backed projects about 95% of the time. I really thought that airport board game from Russia was gonna fly. Oh, shot that percentage right in the We also chat with people who work in the game industry, or we pick an important topic that deals with some aspect of gaming. We welcome you to the Adventure Party.
For more on this Galactic Network podcast, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.
I felt the same, by the way, as you about Rebels. I was bought in. From the beginning, I was bought in. I thought it was going to be a great show. And it wasn't going to be hard to convince me of that in the first place. And Dave Filoni is an excellent mind, you know, an excellent creative mind, especially with Star Wars. With everything that he did with the Clone Wars, I had high hopes for Rebels, and they started to deliver right off the bat. In fact, I think that Rebels is, this is going to be a really controversial thing to say, because there are still a lot of people that are like, bring Clone Wars back. Like, they want Clone Wars back.
I would take Clone Wars, more Clone Wars.
Well, I would take more Clone Wars, but they want it like, oh, get rid of this Rebels shit. Bring in Clone Wars. Like I can't believe you canceled Clone Wars for this. I'm like, how much more did they really have to tell? They went through 5 seasons and Ahsoka left.
After reading Dark Disciple, that's a story I would have loved to see on the screen.
But it wouldn't have been the same. It was better in book form, because they could take it farther. They took it farther in the darkness and the emotions that they wanted to stir. They would not have been able to do that on Cartoon Network.
You want another controversial opinion? Ezra Bridger is probably my least favorite character in Rebels.
We'll get to that. I sort of agree with you. I sort of agree with you.
It's a good thing it's an ensemble cast.
It's a good thing. Rise of the Old Masters was the next episode that we picked as a highlight episode. I believe this is episode number 4, if you count that. We're going to count the two-parter as one episode. So this is the 4th episode of the season, if you count the two-parter as just one.
Okay.
Rise of the Old Masters is where we first get a taste, really, of Kanan's potential in the Force, of the level that he's at as a Jedi, and of the Inquisitor. We meet, really, the Inquisitor in the flesh for the first time, and we see just how much better he is than our heroes are, which is a lot.
And is great. Isn't it awesome to have heroes that are genuinely the underdogs?
Yeah.
Because in every other Star Wars, yeah, they're portrayed as the underdogs, but you know they're going to win. And you genuinely wonder if this Inquisitor is going to kick their ass in a bad way that they can't recover from.
Right, which he does pretty soundly defeat them. throughout this season, he meets them several times. And each time, there is a marked improvement in Kanan's skill, particularly. But this time is the first time that they're meeting him, and he scouts them, and he makes them both look like fools. They're able to get away, basically, sheerly by luck.
Well, and they draw them in the first place, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time since I watched season one of Rebels.
Sure.
With the corpse of Luminara?
Correct, yeah. Luminara Unduli. And that was another brilliant part about this episode to me, was, you know, Kanan's trying to teach Ezra to become a Jedi, but he's like, oh, here's a real Jedi master. If we break her out, then she can teach Ezra, for real, what I would never be able to teach him. And he's doubting himself as a teacher from the very beginning.
Well, and then how far behind the eight ball does he feel when she's dead?
Oh, yeah.
Because this is, you know, this is a Jedi master that is going to train Ezra and help me, because Kanan's not a Jedi Knight.
No, he never graduated to Jedi right. Knight. He was just a Padawan.
So he feels inferior to begin with. And he's trying to train Ezra, and here's his hope, and he pins so much on that, and then she's dead. She dead.
And you can see it in his actions when they're trying to rescue her. He is very focused in his, like, the way that he uses the Force. There's the moment where he grabs two stormtroopers, and he pulls them towards himself, and he gives them, like, a double clothesline in midair and knocks them out, and Ezra says, man, you're really not messing around tonight. And he's like, there's more at stake here than you realize. And it's like, man, this Kanan can work. The other Kanan was dumb. No, I'm kidding. I don't want to get too much into the characters, because we are going to give them each their own due. But I did think that this was a really cool first meeting of the villain, and it did set it up where the villain was the dominant party of the battle. In a great way.
And don't get me wrong, you know Vader is badass in the original trilogy.
Sure.
But I don't ever remember, and we mentioned this when we were talking about Empire, even though they lost, you still end that episode with the feeling that it's all going to be okay.
And this episode, I don't know if you really get that.
Right, you don't get that. That's one of the things that it's one of the things I love about Rebels, is you genuinely leave going, damn.
Path of the Jedi is the next episode that we picked. It's a major jump forward for Ezra. Kanan lets him basically use the Force to find a Jedi temple buried on Lothal. And there, Ezra is able to go through his own little trial, essentially, of the Force. Yoda reaches out to him. Yoda actually helps him, not physically, but, you know, in spirit. He's speaking with him through his hiding place on Dagobah. And he makes the comment while they're in that Jedi temple to Kanan, because he speaks to him directly as well. He says something to the effect of, I couldn't see you before, and now I can. So clearly you're doing something here that means something. You know, you're making waves.
Well, the other thing that you take away from that is Kanan wasn't doing anything before.
Right. He had completely, I mean
he even disassembles his lightsaber all the time.
He kept it, though.
But, and I was going to point this out when we talked about Kanan, why does he keep taking the damn thing apart? Why? It's not like you don't look at that and go, well, that's obviously a lightsaber hilt.
Well, no, because if it the way that it is put on his belt, it looks like it could be something else, a flashlight or something.
No.
There's weird equipment in Star Wars, man. It could have been a remote for something.
And I would accept that if Jedi weren't a thing.
It doesn't have the hilt on the top.
It doesn't have the little disc on the top.
Right, the hilt.
No, the hilt is the handle part. That's what he carries on his
sorry.
Belt.
The guard. It doesn't have the guard on the top.
No quillion.
It's not a lightsaber until he puts it together.
Right. Nobody can tell. And nobody knows that Superman is Clark Kent because he's got glasses on.
It is funny, though, that he does that, because it really doesn't do much, does it? And then by the end of the season, he just kind of starts carrying it openly anyway. So what right. was the point of really ever, like, making it that cool click-click? Well, ooh.
But actually, I think it has a point. I'm getting ahead of us here, but I think that's... I don't think taking it apart necessarily made anybody else feel that it wasn't a lightsaber. Like, I don't think the Inquisitor would have looked at it, or Callus would have looked at it and went, oh, that's not a lightsaber. Obviously, it's a lightsaber to anybody who has any idea what's going on. But Kanan wanted to hide so badly that he superficially disassembled this device in a way that's completely meaningless.
Sure.
In order to hide the fact that he's a Jedi. And I that's why I brought it up, because that's the only reason I can think of why he did it.
Speaking of lightsabers, Ezra is able to build his own lightsaber after this episode.
Lightsaber slingshot combo.
Yep, lightsaber gun, you know, stun gun, whatever, which is something we'd never ever seen before, not even close. Something very unique to him. And he finds the crystal by going through a bit of a trial of being able to control his fear, which we know from the prequels and from many Jedi teachings, that fear
leads to anger, leads to hate, and hate leads to the dark side.
To the dark side. So it makes sense that he would have to go through a trial of sorts of, can you look fear in the eyes and conquer it? And he was able to do that. And they rewarded him with a lightsaber crystal because of that. Now, I mean, the Force, essentially, rewarded him with a lightsaber crystal because of that. And Yoda says, a Jedi you may yet be. Not actually acknowledging Ezra as a Jedi.
Right. Well, he's not yet at that point. He hasn't really been trained.
I mean, he's technically a Padawan, but
How can you be a Padawan to a Padawan?
Good question.
I think he's a youngling, even though he's an older person.
15, I think, at that point.
So he's an oldling?
He's an oldling, you are.
There you go.
That's what they call me, too.
Because he's not oldling. He can't be a Padawan. He doesn't have a Jedi Knight to train him.
No. The old smoothie himself, Lando Calrissian, makes an appearance in this season of Star Wars Rebels. The Lando system. We actually get a couple different cameo appearances. We get C-3PO and R2-D2 are in the second episode of the series, Droids in Distress. Bail Organa is in that episode as well. And then we get Lando here in Idiot's Array. And you were keen to talk about this episode. Why was that?
Because introducing Lando and giving that I think Lando Calrissian is a really interesting character that I don't think we see enough of in the other movies.
Yeah, we don't get that much of him. We get some stuff here and there, obviously, and then he's Han's friend.
Right, he's Han's friend. He wins Bespin in a card game. He steals Han's clothes. That's what we see of him in Empire. And then he gets a job working for Jabba in Jedi. And then apparently after Han's out, he's like, I'm done. And he's kind of off. But they hint at Lando's a badass. Because he's Han's friend.
And Han only hangs out with the cool people.
Because Han's a badass. Han gets away with wearing a vest all the time. He's that level of cool.
He wears a vest in 2 of the 3 movies. Okay?
So 60% of the time.
Okay,
he
fine.
Makes a vest
fine.
Look cool.
He can do the vest.
And his friend, who won a city in a card game.
I don't know if he won the city in the card game, did he?
I don't know. It's still, I wanted to know more about Lando. So when Lando showed up and we see just what kind of a sleazy shitbag he is, but he's still a good guy.
Yeah.
That's right? Awesome. Because he is a swindler and a scoundrel. I mean, what do we see in this episode? He cheats the rebels out of Chopper. And then he sells Hera to the guy that you described as the flaccid pink man.
The floppy pink man, yeah. As Morrigan. He sells Hera, or at least he's like, just go along with it. Here's the slave that I promised.
Which
you.
Is awesome, because other than Aayla Secure, who is a badass, don't get me wrong, Hera is probably one of the coolest Twi'leks or Twi'lek, however you want to say it, that we ever encounter.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly one of the very few that is not slutty slave dancer.
Ula?
Right. Well, you've got Ula, then you've got Itchy and Scratchy. We're watching the Twi'lek dancer porn during the holiday special. You know what I mean? You see
plenty. Itchy and Scratchy.
Well, Itchy is, isn't that the dad's name?
Itchy's the dad's name, yeah.
Yeah,
Chewbacca's dad, Itchy.
It was Itchy that was watching it.
I don't know. Were those Twi'leks, though? I don't think they were.
I thought there was at least one Twi'lek in the
Well, because that would have been before Return of the Jedi. You know, that would have been before Empire Strikes Back, even.
Yeah. I thought they were Twi'leks.
Maybe there were. I don't know. I've sort of blocked it out of my memory.
Right, right. And maybe I'm just making it better than it was. That's plausible.
You're trying to redeem the holiday special in some sick, twisted way.
But, I mean, let's be honest with each other. Until Clone Wars came out, Ula was the you had Ula and Bib Fortuna.
Oh, yeah. As the examples of what Twi'leks were in the galaxy.
Right. Sure. And so every Twi'lek girl wore fishnet Aladdin costume.
We're kind of getting our head of ourselves, I think.
Yeah, anyway, that they tried to return her to the stereotypical what a Twi'lek does. Like, Lando was like, whoa, she's a Twi'lek. I can sell her as a sex slave.
Oh, sure.
That's what I was trying to get at, okay. Because that's how they've been portrayed in everything else. And Hera is so not that. But Lando's like, oh, yeah, I can get away with that. I'm Lando Calrissian.
I'm Lando Calrissian. And then he almost... they kind of swindle him at the end. They take some fuel from him, and they set him up. He winds up being set up with kind of a farming operation of this, like, inflatable pig.
Right.
On Lothal. And that's how they came across him in the first place. So, I agree with you. This was like a version of Lando. It was like peak Lando.
Yeah.
You know, we see Lando as the good guy. I mean, you know, obviously on Cloud City, when we first see him, he makes the deal with Vader and Boba Fett and sells Han away. But he eventually comes to his senses.
Well,
and he's like, oh, I can't do this to my friend.
And like we talked about when we were talking about it, he really didn't have a choice in the matter at the time.
This deal's getting worse all the time.
Pray I don't alter it any further. I have altered the deal. Pray I do not alter it any further.
Exactly. I see what you mean. And then in Return of the Jedi, he is a full-blown good guy.
Right.
He rescues Han. He wears Han's clothes.
But we never get to see him be that guy. Except for... and we might in the Han Solo movie.
Right.
But this is the first time we get to see Lando.
Lando at his scummiest.
Right.
If you will.
And he's still not a terrible person.
No.
He's not Hondo.
He's no who. Oh, no. He's not Hondo Onaka, that's for sure.
But he's still Lando. And so, yeah, that's why it's on my list.
And finally, Fire Across the Galaxy is a highlight episode for us. That is the finale of Star Wars Rebels. That's something this show has done very well from the beginning, is making their season finales events. You know, big, big-time stuff.
I had a full-on nerdgasm at the end of this.
Well, they fight and they defeat the Inquisitor.
Yeah.
And Kanan does not kill him. He chooses to kill himself because he doesn't want to face Darth Vader. He doesn't want to face the wrath of his failure.
Which, you know, I don't blame him.
I don't blame him either. I don't blame him either. But the Inquisitor throws himself into the fire and really, yeah, you see the growth of Kanan and Ezra through this series. As fighters, as lightsaber duelists, being able to finally best the Inquisitor at the end. You also get a lot of great action moments from the rest of the crew who are trying to rescue Kanan from Grand Moff Tarkin.
Well, and this was the highlight of this episode for me, as much as I love Vader, we got to meet Fulcrum and find out who the person is who was really organizing all these disparate rebel cells,
or at least giving them information.
Right, but sharing the information between all these different cells everywhere. Am I not close enough?
No, yeah, you just weren't directing your voice at enough.
Sorry, that's because
you can sit back, but if you turn it closer to yourself, maybe that'll help.
How's that?
That's better.
Okay, sorry. we get to meet Fulcrum for the first time, and it's Ahsoka. So you've got all this Jedi who's trying to strive to be a Jedi, and he's working with this rebel cell, and he's trying to reclaim being a Jedi, and it turns out that the person giving them instructions the whole time is somebody who quit being a Jedi, that the Jedi cast out. And that was just awesome for me. And I love Ahsoka, so.
Sure. Yeah, I had always kind of had that itch in the back of my head of like, it's probably Ahsoka. You know, they'll find a way to bring her into this show. And they do, and at the end of the first season, there she is.
Oh, I was so excited.
Were you
I
surprised that they pulled the trigger so soon?
I was actually surprised. I didn't expect it to be Ahsoka. You had the itch all along. I did not expect Fulcrum to be Ahsoka. I figured she'd show up eventually, but I didn't expect it to be such a pivotal character at the time.
Back when this episode aired, the week that it aired, it was either a couple days later or the very same week, the book Heir to the Jedi was released. And this was a solo adventure for Luke and R2. It was really the first look that we
were... Is it really a solo adventure then if it's Luke and R2?
Okay, well, Luke was the main character. R2 was along for the ride.
And probably did all the work. Because he's R2.
He did some of the work, but Luke handled himself pretty well.
I
criticized this book actually a lot. I'm not necessarily saying you have to go read it, because I do feel like for the first canon, you know, like since Disney purchased the property, for the first canon entry of Luke Skywalker, I felt like it was underwhelming. I felt like it had a problem capturing Luke's voice. I had a problem believing that, because it's set in between 4 and 5. I had a problem believing that the episode 4 version of Luke fit into the adventure that they were putting him in. But regardless of my problems with that, there was a character in the book who her species was very, very math-based. You know, she thought about things in equations, and I think that their species could even speak math to each other. And they have to rescue this person. And she doesn't know that Luke is a Jedi, doesn't know that Luke uses the Force until he uses it in front of her. So she says, and this is a quote from the book, again, this is the same week that we find out that Ahsoka is the codename Fulcrum. Astounding. I have never thought of it before, having had no occasion to do so, but the Force must be a Fulcrum variable. And Luke asks, sorry, a Fulcrum variable? She says, a variable around which improbabilities can be turned to probabilities, or vice versa. The impossible becomes possible, at which point one might as well not even do the math. And it struck me because I was like, you clever bastards. You knew that we were going to find out who Fulcrum was, and you put this line in this book on the same week.
You're probably giving him too much credit.
I don't think I am.
Somebody just walked past the room and they're like, Fulcrum, that's a good word. I should use that.
It's a coordinated effort, this story group. And I think that that was done intentionally to connect to the larger thing that Ahsoka is a Fulcrum variable herself. She can be a leader, an early leader for this rebellion, and spur people on to help the galaxy.
But how cool is it that the person the Jedi cast aside is the person who helps the rebellion unite against the Empire that the Jedi were opposing?
Right. That's also true. Yeah, the person that the Jedi were so quick to cast out initially.
Oh, and that... We should probably not talk about that because that still infuriates me.
Speaking of the Jedi, we'll get into some of the characters, the main characters of Star Wars Rebels here. First, we'll start with, I would say he is the main character of the show, and that is Ezra Bridger.
My least favorite member of the core crew.
Now, in the first season, he's definitely at his most insolent, definitely at his most kid-like.
See, I think he goes from impudent child to arrogant bastard, and he never hits that likable level in between.
Never, ever.
For Ezra, for me, he either is a little kid that I just want to slap and send in the corner, or he's that know-it-all teenager that I just want to slap and send in the corner. And don't get me wrong, I like the show. I'm just saying, if it wasn't an ensemble cast, if it was the Ezra Bridger half-hour show, I probably would not have stuck around. Well, I would have. It's Star Wars. I would have watched it. Who am I kidding? But I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much as I do.
Well, no, you make a good point, because there are a couple of lessons, essentially, that he has to learn several times before it actually gets through to him that maybe he should look at things a different way. Maybe he should try and do things a little bit differently in the future. When he saves Zeb's life, I think he saves Zeb's life in Droids in Distress, episode 2. At the beginning of the third episode, he's still talking about how he saved Zeb's life, and he's holding it above him, almost like a, hey, is that any way you treat somebody who saved your life? It's like,
you wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me.
It's like, kid, that's your job. All of you in this crew on this ship are looking out for each other, and you're probably all going to save each other's life at one point or another.
Is Chopper still on board? Then shut the hell up.
Chopper is still on board.
Then shut the hell up, because you are not ahead of him in life saving.
That's right. You're not ahead of him. You're not ahead of Kanan. You're not ahead of any of them.
Right, right. You're at one.
You saved Zeb's life one time. And that's another thing. He helps out. I think it's in Rise of the Old Masters. He like opens a door or something, and he's like, "What? No, thank you. No, good job." And Zeb is like, "You did your job."
Yeah.
What's the big deal?
And I don't remember episode 2. I don't remember Droids in Distress. But let's be honest with each other. Zeb was probably in trouble because Ezra fucked something up.
No. Zeb was fighting. That was a pride thing. He was fighting Agent Callus one-on-one, because Callus had one of the, the bow rifle.
Oh.
He had a Lasat bow rifle, and Zeb had a problem with that for good reason. But I think that Ezra makes some leaps in this season, but you're right, for the most part, he kind of stays at that. They give him the benefit of the doubt in a lot of ways. And I don't know if by the end of the season, he's certainly more heroic than he is at the beginning. But he also definitely has an idea in his mind of, I know the best thing to do for me. So that's obviously got to be the best thing for everybody, right?
I know all the best people.
I know all the best people.
No, we don't need to get into that.
But honestly, I got the impression watching it that if it wasn't for the fact that Kanan really wanted to, like Kanan felt he needed to do something to help the Jedi, to keep the Jedi alive, I don't think they would have necessarily tolerated Ezra's crap for as long as they did.
Right.
For him to become somebody that was worth anything.
And Ezra has a lot of problems catching on to what being a Jedi really is as well.
He has a lot of problems catching on to what being a member of a crew is, to what being a rebel is. I mean, he just has a lot of problems catching on to anything that doesn't involve me being me.
I would argue, actually, that being a rebel, like when they actually formally, you know, start fighting with other people, which is later on in season 2, obviously, that he takes to that pretty well, because they're going against the Empire, and he hates the Empire for what they did to his family.
But that's kind of a byproduct of his own thing. That's not necessarily he's a rebel. It's the rebels are doing what Ezra wants to do, so it works.
Right.
They share a goal.
That's what I mean, yes.
Yeah, so they share a goal there, but I mean, he doesn't ever belong to anything greater than himself. Like, you ever meet one of those people who acts like they're the main character in the story?
Yeah.
Ezra, to me, seems like he thinks he's the main character in his story.
No, yeah, for sure.
And for that sure. Just annoys the hell out of me.
And it hurts
Because I'm the
him.
Main character.
Because Ben is the main character.
That's right.
It hurts his growth in the Force. Eventually, he starts to come around to the idea that the crew is, it's for the greater good, and by the time he receives his lightsaber crystal, I think he has earned it for the most part. But he, you can tell that he's not completely, it would be easy for someone to seduce him to the dark side if they tried.
Is and that foreshadowing, Zach?
It is a little bit of foreshadowing. Foreshadowing. Meanwhile, Kanan Jarrus, a.k.a. Caleb Doom, the former Jedi Padawan who survived Order 66 and went into hiding. Like you said, he went so far in his own mind to find a way to separate his lightsaber. Now, I've got a question for you. This is more of a theory than anything.
He also hides it under his bed on the ship. If memory serves.
It's in a drawer.
Right, but it's on the ship. It's not like, oh, the Empire's coming, quick, hide it in the drawer. It's just that's where it goes.
It goes into a drawer, yeah.
Yeah. I just mean, he could have it with him on the ship. Everybody on board knows he's a Jedi.
But he chooses not to.
Right.
Well, at least at the beginning.
Right.
What do you make of his... We're finding him at the point in his life when he feels, yes, a responsibility to carry the Jedi flame. It's been years, 15 years, since his whole world fell apart around him as a child.
Right. He failed. And he feels that failure. He has survivor's guilt.
Okay.
Because he survived Order 66. His master's gone. All these more powerful Jedi are gone. People who deserve to survive are gone, and he made it. Why?
I think especially since he hasn't been using his abilities for anything.
Right, I think that's a big part of his character, and I liked that. I liked that it was, because every other Jedi that you see, there's no other Jedi that does that. Even, Obi-Wan and Yoda are hiding, but they're hiding because of the mission, you know? There's something bigger going on there. Kanan is hiding because he's ashamed. And I like that you have... The Jedi is not the most badass member of the crew.
Who is the most badass member of the crew?
That is a tough call. It's a toss-up between... And I know this is going to suck, but Hera, Sabine, and Zeb. Which are the non-force-sensitive people.
Besides Chopper.
Who aren't droids, right?
Hera is the leader of the crew. I think that's also a refreshing thing, is that, yes, you have a Jedi on board, but that Jedi is not the be-all, end-all of the operation. Hera is the unequivocal leader of the Ghost crew.
Right. And she's good at it. And she's a strong female character in a way that, damn it all, we needed in Star Wars.
Well,
we have strong female
Leia characters. Leia was a very strong female character.
In Episode 4.
And 5. And 6.
Yeah, okay.
6, I would say in 6 she probably took like a step back a little bit. But that's really because the story didn't do much for her.
I think she stepped down in each of those movies a level.
You think she stepped down a level in 5? In what way?
What did she do?
Well, we didn't... She commanded the Rebel defense when they were defending Hoth.
Okay, so she failed as a leader, and then she tells Han she loves... Well, she argues with Han. She tells Han
she actually didn't fail as a leader. She orchestrated...
She actually got everybody away.
She orchestrated the evacuation, and then she stayed until the very end.
Okay, so... You're right, she was badass in the very beginning of 5. So she's a badass in 4, she's a badass in the beginning of 5, and then she starts to taper off and go downhill.
I guess you could say that, I think that the situations that she was in are not necessarily...
We're talking
well.
About the girl who took the blaster rifle away from... I don't remember if it was Luke or Han.
I think it was Luke.
Yep. And saved them from the... got them out of the detention center.
Yep, into the garbage chute, Flyboy.
But she said... You know what I mean? That badass is the same one who was like, oh, Han, I love you so much, I have to take off my mask in the middle of Jabba's palace. Hera was a strong character from the beginning, and not... She's a strong character and still a feminine character. in a way that doesn't ever belittle her, in my opinion.
Yeah, she's definitely also the mom. You know, she's the mom of the ship. She does look after the other characters. She looks after Ezra in the way that a parent would, of making sure that he's making the right choices, that he understands. That's the other thing. I think that a lot of that may be where Kanan, Zeb, even Sabine sort of fall short with Ezra, where they just kind of tell him what to do, and they kind of expect him to just know and to like learn the lesson. But Hera will go out of her way to be like, so this is the situation. What's the right thing to do? You can't leave them alone. Even in the very first episode, when Ezra and Hera are sitting in the cockpit of the Ghost, and the rest of the crew is in the Star Destroyer. They went there for the Wookiees, and they were led into a trap. And Hera and Ezra realize it's a trap. And they're like, and Hera says, you have to go warn them. There's no other way. They need help. You're the only person who can help them. And he's like, I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to help. Because she convinces him in a way that gets to him. She understands him. She understands a way to motivate. That's the hallmark of a good leader.
She's the glue that keeps that whole crew together.
Right.
Because without Hera, that crew doesn't stay together.
No, probably not. I mean, there are moments where Sabine, there's a whole episode where Hera and Sabine get their own episode. Talk about strong female characters. The whole episode of the show focused just on them. They were alone because their ship, the Phantom, broke down, and they were stuck on a planet. They had to survive fighting these creatures who they avoided the light. They stayed in the dark, but they still they were almost like attack dogs, like hyenas that they had to try and fend off while waiting for help to arrive. So showed their resourcefulness, but the reason why they were stuck in that situation in the first place was because Sabine wanted to meet Fulcrum, and she was being held out of the conversation by Hera. Hera was the only member of the crew who had really ever communicated with Fulcrum, because she was the leader. And Sabine was like, you have to start telling me more, or I can't do this. And by the end of that episode, Hera was able to convince her that there was a larger vision, and she just kind of had to sit tight right now, because the less that she knew, the less that she could reveal if she got captured.
Yeah, I loved Hera's character. I guess if I had to pin who the most badass member of the Ghost crew is, I think it's Hera.
Yeah.
I think it's Hera.
At least in the first season, for sure. We move on to Sabine Wren. Of
the redemption of Mandalore.
The redemption of Mandalore, if you will. So that's really how you felt about it? You felt like she was the redemption of...
She was the badass Mandalorian that I had always wanted. She's got just enough sassy to be fun. Because she's obviously not the mom.
Right.
You know, but she's a street artist who likes to blow stuff up. And she's just fun. She's that kind of crazy character that you enjoy watching.
We found out that she escaped from the Imperial Academy. She actually had some Imperial training before escaping and becoming a part of the Ghost crew. I think that that's something that, with the exception of... No, even Kanan. I read A New Dawn, which was the novel that's sort of the prequel novel to the Rebels story, where Kanan and Hera first team up, essentially. And at the end of the book, it's just Kanan and Hera on board the Ghost. There's no Chopper, there's no Zeb, there's no Sabine.
Why is there no Chopper?
Because Chopper just wasn't a part of the crew yet.
No, Hera gets Chopper when she's little.
No, she doesn't. There's no Chopper.
Yes, we learned that.
I promise you, there's no Chopper.
I believe you, there's no Chopper in the book, but I know watching Rebels...
Maybe Chopper is at her house.
That could be.
Maybe,
because she finds and repairs... He's the astromech that was in a Y-wing that crashed
right
outside her home when she was younger.
So maybe he's at her house, but she wasn't with him in this book, at least as far as I remember. Who knows? I could be completely fucking wrong.
That's happened.
That has happened before. But my point is, in that book, Hera almost kind of has to trick Kanan. Or not trick him. Hera almost doesn't allow Kanan to travel with her, because she looks at him and she says, yeah, he is a force user, but he's not there's no way he could ever be dedicated enough to fighting for good, to fighting for the galaxy, to be a part of this rebellion, to be a part of this bigger rebellion that I'm seeing in my mind's eye, that I want to create, that I want, you know, to really change the galaxy. This guy is not, he doesn't have it. He is not up to snuff. And initially in season two, Kanan is resistant to joining the rebellion in the first place. So maybe she was right in that regard. But you could say that all of the members of the Ghost Crew, with the exception of Hera and maybe Chopper, didn't get in it to be rebels.
No.
They got in it to be rebellious. They got in it for their own gain more than anything.
And Hera directs that angst, that emotion, that drive in the way that it needs to.
She makes them see that maybe they do want to help other people.
She herds the cats that are the Ghost Crew.
That's a good way to describe it. But yes, I think she gives a very good first impression in this series. She's very resourceful, even though she is very young. She can't be that much older than Ezra, maybe a year or two.
Yeah, she's like the late teen rebellious kind of fun character that you want to date but not bring home to mom because you're scared.
You're scared of what's going to happen.
Right. You're like, I want to go out with this girl, but I'm really afraid I won't live through the night.
Right.
That kind of thing. And I don't even mean that in the fun, amazing way that you're probably thinking I mean it. I just mean she's probably going to blow shit up and the cops are going to chase us through town. It's going to be amazing.
Hey, for some people, that's what they want.
Right.
That's what they're looking for.
But I mean, and I don't know if it's in this. First off, her Mandalorian armor is colored so bizarre that it just grabs you right away. And she designs what turns out to be the rebel symbol. That's her take.
A very early version, that phoenix.
Right, which eventually morphs into, and that's the start of the Phoenix Squadron, which then morphs into the rebel symbol.
The firebird of the Rebel Alliance, right.
That's the tag she leaves on Imperial stuff before she blows it up. Because she's blowing up an airfield. We see her in first season planting bombs at an airfield.
Yeah, that was in a short introducing her character. Yeah. Gera Zeb Aurelios. Zeb for short.
The cool thing about Zeb is, do you know where they got, I'm sure you know and I'm sure everybody listening knows, but I'm going to say it anyway. Do you know where they got the character model for Zeb?
Yep, they got it from an early concept art drawing of what Chewbacca might look like.
That's right, which is one of the reasons I loved Zeb from the beginning, because they went back to that original concept art.
They also teased it by trying to play him off as a hairless Wookiee to the Empire in like the first episode.
Right.
Something about a hairless Wookiee, and he was like, and he tried to do the growl, and he just couldn't. But yeah, I thought that was a really cool thing about this show in general, which we haven't even really talked about, that many of the designs were taken straight from Ralph McQuarrie's art, his early ideas of what ships could look like, his early ideas of what the stormtroopers maybe could look like, what the TIE fighter itself had actually shorter wings in Rebels than it does in the movies. Because that's the way that Ralph drew it. The paint schemes on a lot of the ships are the same as the way Ralph drew them. Very McQuarrie-inspired, and I really give him a lot of credit for that.
I really appreciated and liked that as well. And Zeb is a great character to begin with.
Zeb is really cool. He's a little bit of an endangered species. One of the last of the Lasat warriors.
But he's like the grand. If Hera's the mother of this family, he's like the crabby uncle.
Yeah.
Or maybe a young grand. Well, not young. He's a crabby uncle. Like the older crabby uncle.
He's not afraid to express his displeasure with a situation or with a plan.
Anybody.
Oh, what a crappy plan. Like, this is just a bad Sabine plan. Like,
right.
what a stupid girl. But it winds up working out. And out of all of the characters, I think Zeb gets the least development. You know, he's there. And we get a little bit of him, but in this season particularly, we get more of his growth in he accepts Ezra as a member of the crew. And then after that happens, he kind of just becomes a side character.
Well, but he's also the most grounded member of the crew.
In what way?
Well, like, he's the member of the crew who will look at a plan and say, this is dumb. I'm going to do it because you can't succeed without me, but this is dumb.
Sure.
He doesn't have, whereas Hera, she is totally rebellion. She needs to be part of this. She takes foolish risks sometimes to help the rebellion. Whereas Zeb is the person who will point out that what we're doing here is dumb. We shouldn't trust this person. We shouldn't go to this place. This is going to be a trap. He's that very grounded because that's what he is.
But he's also tricked into giving Chopper away.
Yeah.
Granted, he thought he had a hand that couldn't be beaten.
Right. But you know, Lando.
Lando.
But he's... I just, for the crew, I think that's the role he plays. He's the grounded person who, his whole motivation being there seems to be because everybody else would be dead without him. Like, he's lost, don't get me wrong. He's just as lost as everyone else. But, I don't know, he just seems like a very grounded person in that way, and I really like Zeb. He's the curmudgeon you love to love.
We've mentioned Chopper many times. Obviously, Chopper as a character, he kind of remains very flat. He's very comic relief, you know, as many of the droids are. But you can tell, you made the point before we started recording.
He's the most articulate astromech you ever encounter to date in Star Wars.
Right.
You know what he's saying. Now, not the exact words necessarily, but you based on the cadence and the context, you can understand he's going, this is a stupid damn plan. And you hear, and you're like, oh, that's exactly what he said.
You also get more of the characters around him respond to him than anyone else.
Because he's the most articulate astromech there is. He doesn't have to be plugged into something to know what he's saying.
Ezra knows what he's saying. Hera knows what he's saying. Ezra learns to know what he's saying, but Hera knows what he's saying. Sabine knows what he's saying. Kanan knows what he's saying. Zeb has trouble understanding him. It's kind of crazy to think about, like, how much context that adds, because even when you don't exactly know, what really helps is the character's response to him directly.
Right. Or what he's responding to, and so you hear that cadence, you hear the inflection.
And you get an idea. And you can always just in your head think that he's swearing as well, which right. He almost certainly is. I think the producers of Rebels have said, if you were to they've said, like, you don't want to translate Chopper. He's not family friendly.
Well, but neither is R2. I mean, they beeped out everything he ever said.
Yeah. Oh, what a funny joke, Ben. Yeah. You're so funny.
Yeah, I'm hilarious.
Did anybody ever tell you that you're funny?
No.
All right. Yes, Chopper remains even though a lot of times he also is sometimes reluctant to help. He knows at the end of the day that this is his family, and he does what he can to help them.
Well, and he also, unlike, now obviously he's not the only astromech that does this, but when you think of astromechs, you automatically think of R2-D2, who saves the day all the time.
And I don't think Chopper is in that role as much.
Well, that's what I was going to point out.
But he certainly is instrumental.
But the thing is, Chopper messes up. You know what I mean? He's not the savior. He's another character in the show. He's not Deus Ex Machia like R2 seems to be. He screws up quite a bit.
He has his flaws. He has his moments where he doesn't come through.
Probably because he's reprogrammed by Hera.
Probably. Missing a couple wires?
Probably.
Finally, we'll talk about the main villain of this season. He doesn't make it out at the end. The Inquisitor, the Grand Inquisitor, as we now know that he was supposed to be called. One, are you a little shocked that this was the best Inquisitor?
Well, not really, because if he was any better, he would have been a Sith.
Oh, sure. And that's the tricky thing about the Inquisitors, something they made clear on Rebels Recon, which is the show that they do during the Rebels season on YouTube. They'll put out, it's almost like a mini episode guide. After the episode airs, they'll put out the Rebels Recon episode, and they'll have little snippets of interviews with the crew of what they were thinking for that episode. And when they're talking about the idea of the Inquisitors, it's not, they're not Sith. Because there can't ever be more than two Sith.
Right, there can only be two.
But they are, like Asajj Ventress kind of was, they are almost attack dogs in a way. They're trained to an extent, and they do know the Force, and they know how to use their darker emotions to summon the Force and to wreak havoc in the way that they need to. But they are not finely tuned machines by any respect. And even the Inquisitor, I mean, even the Inquisitor's lightsabers, they're almost like a little bit of cheating, because they spin around on that hilt, and that makes them infinitely more dangerous than they would usually be in a one-on-one setting.
Oh my god, I just realized that is the exact same fighting style General Grievous used.
It is, isn't it?
Hold it forward and just spin it around.
Another person who was, he couldn't use the Force at all, but he was trained by a Sith to use the Jedi. Your Jedi arts. I can't even do a Grievous accent. I can do a Grievous cough, though.
And that's all we need from you. But the Inquisitor almost serves the role that the Emperor's Hand did in the EU.
Yeah, that very reminiscent of that, I think. Except not to as great of an extent.
Yeah. I thought it was a good villain, and I thought it was a good foil for Kanan at his level of Force use.
Are you a little surprised, because, I mean, and we technically learned this in Season 2, but are you a little surprised that the Grand Inquisitor was a Jedi, was an actual Jedi Knight?
Not really. I'm not really surprised, because most of the non-Sith Force users that we encounter in canon are failed Jedi. Asajj Ventress was a former Jedi. The Inquisitor was a former Jedi. Not the Night Sisters. I don't think we meet her this season. I don't think we meet her till the next season.
The Seventh Sister?
Right, the Seventh Sister. I don't know if she was.
I don't think she was.
But you know what I mean? Asajj was a former Jedi. The Inquisitor was a former Jedi. It makes sense.
But you don't think it's a little shocking? Because that would mean that he would have to have been recruited to the Sith cause, essentially, to the Emperor's side, after Order 66. So you don't find it a little shocking that the Emperor would allow this former Jedi to live?
Maybe he was recruiting him beforehand.
Maybe. That's true. Maybe Anakin wasn't the only Jedi that Palpatine was talking to. That would be an interesting story. I'd like to hear that.
Okay, so I stand corrected. Star Wars Rebels still tells us an interesting movie that they didn't play.
That they did not let us know. And who knows, maybe we'll get it someday. Is there anything else about Rebels Season 1 that you think we missed? I think we covered quite a bit.
I think there is a character that we didn't talk about that I'm sure appears in Season 1.
Who's that?
Agent Kallus.
Well, I mean, in this season, he's very one-dimensional.
He is, but he becomes an important character, so if we don't talk about him now...
Okay. Agent Kallus, he's an ISB agent, which that's cool. They brought the Imperial Security Bureau in from the EU. They use that idea again here.
Right.
He's an ISB agent, and he winds up clashing with this group of rebels in particular several times.
And clashing with the Inquisitor, not in a physical confrontation, but he has a different way he thinks that they should be approached.
Oh, sure.
And I think that that's... I think that that's interesting, too, because we don't really see outside of some Imperial soldiers challenging Vader and getting force choked, you don't really see a lot of... It's interesting to see that the Empire isn't this giant, cohesive, everything functions thing. And Rebels does a good job of making even the Imperials appear human as opposed to just cookie-cutter stand-in villains.
Sure.
And I think Callus plays that role very well in Season 1 and obviously in later seasons. And I think we need to mention him because of that. He's the first one to identify that Kanan is probably a Jedi.
Well, after Kanan ignites his lightsaber, anybody could have done that.
Again, I posit that you could tell by the flashlight hanging from his belt. But
he didn't say focus your fire. He said focus your fire on the Jedi. And it was a very declaratory statement after Kanan had already ignited
but
his lightsaber.
I think we need to talk about Callus because okay. We're going to talk about him when we talk about later seasons.
No, you make good points. Yep, he certainly, even though he was defeated several times by the heroes, he was the guy who took the fall, where the Inquisitor, they always just kind of escaped from him. They never really beat him. Whereas with Callus, they kind of beat him on several occasions.
Well, and he always presented a much more militaristic approach to how they needed to handle these rebels. He was very methodical and very... like I said, a very military approach to it.
Sure.
Which at times the Inquisitor disagreed with and the Inquisitor outranked him. And Callus was right.
and that you could almost say that attitude, that the Inquisitor and eventually Darth Vader, you can see that they...
Well, and Tarkin eventually and Tarkin, in later seasons.
Well, Tarkin not so much because he's part of that Imperial organization. But I think that the Sith and the Inquisitors and their influence on the situation, I think that can be attributed to what eventually causes Callus to leave, to become a spy and to defect
right
to the rebellion.
But, and since you brought it up later episodes, because I was trying to skirt around that, even Admiral Thrawn is dismissive of Callus.
Right, yeah.
So everybody, and Callus has more on-the-ground, hands-on intelligence about the Ghost Crew than any other Imperial.
Than anybody, for sure.
And they are continually dismissive of him.
As I was trying to be dismissive of him.
Right, as you were. You underestimated Agent Callus.
I do, and I still will, going forward.
You should not.
Okay. We'll see.
I mean, he's no Ahsoka. But he may be a point where impossibilities become possibilities.
He may be a fulcrum point, if you will. He just may be.
Just may be.
Well, that's Season 1 of Star Wars Rebels. We probably went on a little too long about things that we didn't necessarily need to. But
fix that in editing, Zach.
Maybe I will, maybe I won't.
You probably won't.
Who cares, right?
You didn't do it last time.
Only 50 people or so are listening to this.
You just knocked it down to 22.
And I only care about my day ones anyway, so. I'm joking.
I just want to point out how loving and caring I am as the representative of the dark side on this couch. As yeah, opposed to you.
Really loving and caring, that's for sure. Ugh.
I love all of our listeners.
I do too.
I love them all equally. You do not. You can't make that statement.
I guess I can't make that statement. Well, I appreciate the people who've been there from the very beginning. You got to give those people the credit that
they deserve. I appreciate them.
In what way?
Well, I appreciate every listener. I appreciate our day ones too, but I'm pretty sure one of us has sat here and said, no, I only care about the day ones. Fuck everybody else. And that person was not me.
That was a joke. You're taking it out of context.
No. Re-listen to it. There's recorded evidence.
And I say immediately after, it's a joke.
I don't recall that.
All right. Well, recall this. We got to end this episode.
All right, Zach.
This has been an edition of the New Jedi Archives, and we will be back next week. I believe that we're actually going to be taking a look at a more of a real world piece of the Star Wars galaxy.
Oh, hell yeah.
You might have all had your share of Star Wars joy under the Christmas tree. or in wrapping paper for your birthday. We're talking about the toys.
That's
and
right.
And the effect that the toys have had on us, and the effect that the toys really have had on all of Star Wars. We're going to give the toys their love.
And continued effect.
And continued effect that the toys
The largest have. Lego set ever released for general consumption is a Millennium Falcon.
Just announced a couple of days ago, I think. It was on Force Friday.
Yeah, way to date the episode, Zach.
Oh, sorry. Whatever. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that in 2 weeks. Until then, Ben, may the Force be with you.
And also with you, Zach.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.